Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Productivity Mastery. If you're listening for the first time, well, welcome to the show. If you've been listening already for quite some time and you enjoy listening to these episodes, learning from the leaders that we are bringing you, make sure to subscribe on your favorite platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or any other major platform. Having more people to subscribe help us to bring even more and more exciting guests, like the guest we're having today. Very, very excited to introduce him. And first of all, full credit to one of our previous podcast guests, Maya Voye, for making this introduction. She's been fascinated by Jason. Jason Silver is our guest today. She's been completely blown away. And she was like, Stoyan, you need to talk to Jason. This guy's the real deal. And I'm like, who's Jason, man? I need to talk to Jason, right? So Jason, welcome to the show, brother. How are you?
Great, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Big thanks to Maya as well. I'll know whether to thank her or be upset with her when we're done with the conversation. But looked into you as well. Really, really excited to chat. Thanks a ton for having me on. Appreciate it.
Just out of curiosity, how did you guys connect it?
That's a great question. She's like a force of gravity, man. She just like attracts things to her. I don't know how I wound up in the orbit. But we had a chat on her podcast as well. Next thing I know, she's telling me I got to talk to you. So she's writing a book. She's a great let's just talk about her for the whole episode. I think that would be, she would love that. And yeah, it'll go great.
No, but like she's going to be the guest. She's coming back next week. So it was a good next episode. So, hey, everybody, show up again next week. let's start with our guest this week. Jason, instead of me introducing you, why don't you give us kind of an idea about your journey? You're writing a book, actually finishing a book. I want to know all about it. But what led you to this moment? What's your background? How did you end up in the place you are today?
Yeah, cool. So super high level. I've got two kids, both boys, 6 and 3. They keep me busy in a way I never imagined I'd be able to be busy, but it's awesome. I founded two of my own companies, as well as helping grow another in the AI space in the earlier days of AI, back before it was like the cool thing to do and everybody knew exactly what it was. I was also really lucky to be an early employee at Airbnb. So I got to experience what the real Silicon Valley up and to the right unicorn thing looked like. I've crashed one of the companies I founded. So I've kind of seen both ends of the spectrum for better or worse, both great, great learning experiences. Right now I spend most of my professional time working with other executives, helping them build their companies with a real focus on how do you build a business that people actually genuinely love working at? I'm writing a book, like you mentioned. It's called Quietly Crushing It. It's all about how to help anybody unlock bigger impact at work with less burnout in life. It's not really about work-life balance. That comes up a lot. It's more about how to transform work from a drain to one of the biggest positive drivers in your overall well-being in general. And I just launched a newsletter a couple months ago. As I'm kind of working towards publishing the book, which is going to happen next year, I started, it takes a long time to get a book out there. And I really wanted to start sharing it. So, every time I launch an article, which happens, usually it's twice a month, I basically peel a tactic out of the book, something to help you either do or feel better at work. And I share it with folks either from my book or something that I've read. And all that stuff, if you're really super interested in it, you can find it at qcibook.com, stands for Quietly Crushing It book. That's the 50,000 foot view.
where could people find the newsletter and subscribe?
It's all there. So if you go to qcibook.com, you'll find the book there. And if you sign up for the newsletter through the website, I'm going to send you a free preview chapter of the book, which has been super fun, actually, because you know, I didn't know much about writing a book before I started. And what's cool is when people join the newsletter, I share a preview chapter and you're seeing it in a stage before it's actually hitting the shelves. And so when people joined a couple months ago, they saw a pre-edit version. Now, if you join, you see like the next evolution of that. And then hopefully if you do wind up getting the book, if it resonates, you'll see what actually hits the shelf. And it's kind of a cool way to see the progression of a chapter and how it changes like over the life cycle of, here's the original idea I had, here's how I wrote it down, here's how we edited it, and here's how it turned into like the thing that winds up in the actual book. It's a process I knew very little about until, you know, the last year or so. And I've been getting some really interesting feedback about like, oh, it's cool how you kind of shape and mold it over time. So it's fun for me to have people along for the journey, because writing is it could be a very lonely pursuit. So yeah, qcibook.com. You could sign up for it right there. Would love to have anybody jump in.
Working on our second book right now, so I can totally relate.
Yeah. Second book, man. Yeah, you're a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, and it's very difficult with setting realistic deadlines and actually meeting them, especially with my travel schedule. I told you prior to this podcast that I just came home yesterday. In the last 35 days, I've been on the road for 30 days. And, you know, you're always trying to find this kind of spots, right? Like, oh, I have a 3-hour flight. Let me try and write a couple of pages or review this thing, this example. And it's, I mean, it's a struggle, man. It's a struggle. Yeah. Can't wait to read the book, man. And we're going to get back to the book because I'm interested about your process. But before that, you mentioned you are working with a lot of founders, sharing your experience and learnings. Can you tell me more about your work? How do you support founders? What is kind of the process that you do to help them to build their companies?
Yeah, it really varies. I try to do a thing that I really wanted when I was, you know, building my companies. It's really tough when you sit in the founder seat or the leadership seat. It's tough for everybody. Let's be clear. The challenges are just they're just different. And so sometimes people say, "Oh, you're a coach." I'm like, I don't really love that term, to be honest. You know, advisor. Like, yeah, that's like a close analogy. But what I call it is more of, I call it startup personal training. I've not seen the term anywhere, so it's possible I'm the only one. I don't know. Maybe your listeners can point me to somewhere else that it is. But the analogy I really like is when you go to the gym, if you've ever had a personal trainer, sometimes the personal trainer is like telling you exactly how to do the exercise because you've never done it before. And sometimes they're like spotting you, right? Their hands are underneath your hands so that you don't drop a 400-pound, you know, barbell on your face, right? And sometimes they want to get a workout too. And so they're doing the exercise right next to you. And so it's quite similar. Usually founders or their executive teams, like they'll bring me the hardest problem that they have at the moment. And sometimes it's a thing that I just have experience with. I'm like, hey, here's kind of a bit of a roadmap. Like if you go through it this way, I've messed this up 72 different ways. Like this is kind of a bit of a roadmap to help you think about how to solve this thing. Other times it's like, hey, let's do this thing together. You know, what does it look like to take some of the stuff that I've learned and some of the stuff that you've learned in the way that your company operates? And what if we kind of pair program that to the finish line and it takes a really nice shape? And sometimes it's like dive right in and like you need help on a whatever the actual thing might be. Like, I'm actually going to work on this together with you guys because it's something that I feel like getting a workout on right now, so to speak. So I love it. I'm incredibly lucky. One of the very surprising things for me is, you know, I have a bunch of operating experience from my own companies, Airbnb, places like that. And to get to take those lessons and then share it with many companies at once, you know, an example that constantly comes up is like, how do you set goals? What does that look like? How do you set the goal? How do you get them out to the company? How do you cascade it to everybody else who works at the company? Having been through this a lot, I have my own opinions on how to do this. They're not necessarily right. They're just, you know, right for me, so to speak. When I share that with a CEO and then I share that with 10 different CEOs and I get to see them kind of take my concepts and combine them with their own and then deploy it into their company. And then I get to circle back around and see, well, what worked and what didn't. The result didn't come all at once. That would have taken me like, you know, 30 to 50 years to learn all this if I was working inside of the company myself. And so I get this really cool vantage point of like, how do all these different companies think about goal setting or something like it? And I get to learn from that and then inject that back into every place that I work. So it's been a really, really cool experience for sure.
No, it's super rewarding. We don't know each other so well, but actually a lot of the work that you do is similar to the work that I do. I've been working with founders individually as teams, and also in many cases joining acceleration programs.
Oh yeah.
And then you have like, I don't know, 10 founders or 10 companies and the founders of 10 companies at the same time. So yeah. As you said, you can apply many concepts, teach a lot of different concepts, ideas, strategies, and then you can track and measure which of those things they applied and actually work for them. So it's so much learning, man. People think that we're there to teach, but we're also there to learn.
I'm super lucky. Yeah. And it's fun here doing a similar thing. Like, you know, I feel so incredibly grateful that I get to work with the group of people I get to work with. But, you know, like you said, like, I hope that they learn as much from me as I learn from them. And it's a really kind of lucky, fortunate position to be in. It's really great. I love it.
So the question is, there's many startup founders listening to the podcast. Actually, maybe half of our viewers and listeners are founders or working for startups. Since today, one of the topics we're going to cover is struggles. What do you find are the biggest challenges and struggles of a startup founder these days?
Other than raising money, it's a very, very tough time to raise money for sure. I think one of the reasons why I did this, probably why I kind of shifted my attention to this is, you know, hard for me to project on every single founder, but if you're anything like me, you know, I wanted to found businesses because I really enjoy the challenge of doing something really hard. You know, I like when there's no roadmap. I'm not quite sure how to do this thing. Sure, people have done marketing like this before, or they've done sales like this before, or they've done product like this before, but the application of that to like our team, our product, our business, there's always different things you have to try to figure out. And for me, always being so attracted to the hard thing is kind of a bit of a blessing and a curse. It means that like I dive into really hard problems, which is where there's a lot of really interesting business opportunities. But for me, I kind of forgot the importance of enjoying doing the hard thing. Like the point is not just to like accomplish the hard thing and, you know, grind it out and hate your life as you go through it. In my opinion, now in retrospect, I had really lost this idea of like, how do I actually enjoy doing this hard thing so that I don't spend 7 years building a business and, you know, the impact of it is measured at that quote unquote end when, you know, you hit some kind of an exit or something like that. Like, how do you make sure that as you're dealing with the problems, you're enjoying it as you go? Because startups are problem generation machines. You solve one problem, you create 15 new ones. That's great. You got to solve those. But I see a lot of situations, myself included, where you're so focused on the next problem. It's just like stress on top of anxiety, on top of stress, on top of anxiety. And so how can you learn tactics? And they are out there to help you enjoy the process so that, yeah, you're doing hard things. It's not easy. You're not sitting on a beach having a margarita with your feet up. Like it's challenging, but similar to like running a marathon, which is hard, like you're enjoying the process, hopefully, as you're kind of working your way along. And so I really try to focus there in addition to a lot of the core strategy stuff with folks is if you're enjoying this, you're going to do the best job at it and you're going to appreciate it the most. How do you make sure that as you're going through the journey of all the crazy problems, you're finding ways to enjoy it as you go?
It is super interesting that you mentioned that. I just came home from Azerbaijan. I was in Baku yesterday. And in the past few days, I was leading a boot camp on performance or founders' mindsets, psychology, time management, culture, and values. And then I had one-on-one sessions with the startup teams and one of the founders, and that is not an uncommon occasion, situation. One of the founders shares with me his biggest struggle is he's unable to unplug after work.
Yeah.
So when it's 8 p.m., let's say, he still feels there's so much more to do So he cannot really rest and enjoy himself, not only enjoying himself during working hours, but out of working hours, because he feels like he hasn't done enough. There's so much more to be done. And this is a common struggle, common challenge for founders. I wonder, when should founders start paying attention to that? Is that a day one kind of thing for a founder to find a way to enjoy the process? And if that's the case, what would be your recommendations to the founders out there?
Yeah, it's hard to generalize this. I think one thing that could really help this one particular founder to answer your overarching question, is this a day one problem? Absolutely. Like, I think it is 100% a given that you are going to hit some of the biggest challenges, if not in your life, in your professional experience, if you choose to start a business or work for a startup or take on any job with a lot of pressure. You're going to hit challenges. We spend a lot of time at work. There's a lot of, you know, pressure and importance around our work. We don't want to let down our team. You're probably earning money. That money probably helps you live a certain lifestyle. You might have a family and blah, 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 blah. Lots of pressure there. Do you want to be tackling these problems from a place of just like sheer utter exhaustion and burnout? Or do you want to tackle them from a place of like, okay, I'm excited to dive in and try to solve this? And if you're in that second bucket, you will do way better at that problem, let alone the fact that you're going to enjoy it better. The output of it is going to be so much better. So maybe I could give you like one specific tactic for the person you mentioned, who I hope is listening and can kind of take this away. And then we could talk about like an overarching framework that I find lots of people just don't think about. I didn't think about it. And now that I think about it, it's like changed the way I work. So the specific thought is unplugging is hard. I'm really brutally bad at boundaries. Like it's tough. I think it's a bit of a, I think of it as a competitive advantage. I think that like there's always a work problem chugging away or a problem of some kind in the back of my mind somewhere. You know, and you're in the shower and like I'm not actively focused on it, but it's there and I'm giving it some space, and boundaries can be quite tough. I think what I started to do that made a big difference is like you have to take a break. You know, if you don't sleep after some amount of time, your body just gives out. It's the same kind of thing for your mind. Taking a break is not doing nothing. You're trying to do nothing, but it's at serving a purpose. And the purpose is like it's making you better for the things when you're not taking a break. And so when I started to think about it that way, I started intentionally creating a not to do list. So I start my week by looking at all of the many things I need to do. And for pretty much everybody who has any amount of ambition, that list is gigantic. All the things you could spend your time doing. You have a finite amount of time. So how do you pick the things you're going to do? There's like 8 million books, podcasts, blog articles on like productivity, which is like picking the priorities. Did we drop? Are we good? This will be fun for later.
Yeah, I think we dropped a little bit. Picking the priorities was the last thing I heard. So
what I said something amazing when we cut out, and we're just gonna have to assume it was great and move on. But what I was saying is like pretty much all of the productivity knowledge, research, best practices out there are about like the principles of how do you prioritize and then how do you get as much done as you possibly can on the priorities that are there. Great. Well, what happens when you finish a priority? And the big question is like, how much is enough? Because there's always more. And so I start my week by writing a not to do list. And the reason why I do this is kind of twofold. Number one, when you have a set of to do's and you get through them, the easiest thing to do is to just fill the space with more. Right. So if I was just to say like these three things are incredibly important this week, everything else is on my not to do list. When I don't have the not to do list, I just start the next thing on my list and the next thing on my list and the next thing on my list and the next thing on my list, because my to do list is like legitimately like it's endless, never ending item after item after item after item. When I have a not to do list, what I do is when I finish my to do's, these were the big important things for the week. It's not that I'll never take something off the not to do list, but that's the exception, not the rule. I'll actively ask the question in the moment of like, do I absolutely need to take this thing on right now, or can I take a break? And I feel like having the not to do list, which is something that I've decided on in advance, feels like it gives me permission to say, you've done a great job this week. You got all the things done. It's really, you know, great, great job. Like, you know, go take a break, enjoy the break, whatever you want. Without that there, I'm just going to go to the next item, next item, next item, next item. It is way easier to add in more work in a week than it is to take work out from the week. And having done this a whole heck of a lot of times, like all my weeks for the last, I don't know how many years, I would say it is the minority of times when I'm adding work in, because the flip side of that is it almost always takes longer than you expect to get any given task done. You think you can do 16 things in a week, you actually do 10. 10 is what your actual, you know, and if you're running a dev team, you'd call it velocity or capability would be, but you're always planning 16, you only get 10 done. You're going to feel crappy every week because you didn't get six done that you were never going to get done anyway. And so by having a not to do list, you actually see, this is how much I'm capable of in a week. I can increase it a little bit each week if I want to, but when I finish, I'm going to ask the question of, do I need to do this next thing or not? Do I pull it off the not to do list? Should I take a break? And just that small shift of actively deciding at the beginning of your week what you're intentionally not going to work on can really help you with the break side. And then the flip side to that is by describing what you're not going to do, it's way easier for me to avoid distractions. Because I know that there are these three things that are more important than anything else that I need to get done this week. And I have a list of 33 things that are really important, but I've decided not to do them this week. In the middle of the week, something will come up and it like has to do with something on my not to do list. I'm like, nope, I already decided that's not the right thing for me to do this week. And yes, sometimes I might decide to pick because things change as you go through the week. But again, that's the exception, not the rule. And so by clearly defining this group of stuff over here is not something I'm going to work on, you can stay way more focused on the small group of things that are really important. So everyone talks about to-do lists. I highly recommend, yes, do that, but do the opposite as well. Write out a not to-do list. I'm not going to do these things this week. It could be hugely, hugely helpful to help you like take breaks, create space for yourself, and stay focused and do a better job on the stuff that matters most.
I really love the fact that you're recommending people to have a realistic sense of their capability, because that could create so much negative energy when at the end of the week, you've actually progressed quite a bit. You achieve a lot of results, but because you set yourself up for failure to achieve all the results because they were too optimistic at the first place, you know. But there's the opposite side as well, if you think about it. Like, you want to set ambitious goals so that you can push yourself to achieve them. So I think where's the balance, right? Because there's so many different examples and stories and even studies that when you set yourself a stretch goal or ambitious goal or goals, that's like you're probably going to get closer to achieving these goals. I think it's interesting just to go deeper and see what's your take on that.
Yeah. So difference between goal and activities, right? Like for me, there's a big difference between a task and a goal. You know, what are the actual things that I need to do and how far can I push it? You know, obviously there's the old expression, like the moonshot, like aim for the moon, you know, worst case you hit the stars or whatever that expression is. Like, yeah, great. That works for lots of people. I'm not saying not to try that. But I think it does change a little bit when you like zoom right into the granularity of like a week. You know, if I'm trying to accomplish something in 6 months, fill your boots, aim for something big. What am I actually going to do this week? How many things can I actually accomplish? I think it's important. It's important to at least learn your capacity. And of course, you're going to want to grow it over time. And so we talked a little bit about like opening the week, right? With like, this is my to-do list and this is my not to-do list. Closing the week is equally as important. Closing the week with like a very basic retro of like, what did I want to get done? What did I get done? And what's the reason for the difference between what I wanted and what I got? And then you just learn as you go. You know, you figure out, okay, I overscoped this week. Why? I didn't know this, that, and the other. Great. Next week when I plan, I take that into consideration, right? I thought I was going to have 3 hours to work on an airplane. Turns out I just finished a crazy long session. I was really tired. I slept instead. Like, okay, I should keep that in mind, right? That I'm not always going to be able to make use of the airplane time. You don't know exactly what it's going to do, but by closing out the week, you're just getting a little bit more clarity of like, okay, you know, how big is the delta in the example we said earlier? Let's imagine I'm constantly planning for 16 units of work and I'm only accomplishing 10 units, only accomplishing 10 units of work. If that's happening week after week after week, and you're paying attention to something like that, you're like, wait a second. Turns out my capacity is actually 10. Let me make sure I have those 10 units of work on the most important things, because more often what happens is you spread it out across 16 and there's some really important stuff in that six that you don't get to that you probably should have. Right. And so by doing a bit of a retro at the end of the week and just saying, what did I want? What did I get? What's the delta between the two? You can really learn like how to think about your capacity. And then for me, what I love about the not to do list is, let's say I've had a great week. Everything from my to-do list got done and I didn't get to anything on my not to-do list. So in other words, like I hit plan. The way I close out the week is I say, great, what did I want? What did I get? Nice work, Jay. Like, keep it going. That's awesome. And then I take my not to-do list, which is a list of all the important stuff I already told myself I needed to do. And I just pull the top three to-dos out of my not to-do list for the next week. It's sitting right there for me. And it helps me turn myself off a little bit when I am taking a break, say on the weekend or whatever it might be, because I know that there's a really important task and it's sitting in my not to do list. And I know that I'm going to check it on Friday. So it's not going to drop. Right. And I just have this habit of like, okay, at the end of the week on Friday, everything that is important for me to accomplish at work is listed down in my incredibly long not to do list that I check every single week. And so I can write it down and check out for the weekend and say, great, it's sitting there waiting for me. I know what the three most important things are for the week that's coming up. I know what I'm not going to be doing for the week that's coming up. It's not getting dropped. It's all there. Like, I find it's just, it's really helpful. And it's one of these things where, I don't know, people don't really talk about it a ton. It's just like, have a to-do list with all the things you're going to check off. You know, it's Monday. Why not try it this week? Just like write down a list of all the things you are on purpose not going to check off. And think through the process of, does this need to be this week? Is it the right thing for me to do to defer it? And just see what happens. And often I find it's counterintuitive, but if you aim for fewer things, you wind up accomplishing way more. You push them all along further. You have way more impact on it. And until you try that a couple times and see it, you don't really believe what I'm telling you right now. So, you know, give it a shot. Aim for a small number of really important things and write out a big, long not-to-do list so your brain knows that they're captured and you're not going to lose it anywhere. It's just not happening yet.
It is super simple what you're explaining, and actually, I agree 100%. Let me just recap very quickly the core points for the listeners. So, number one, it's okay to set big goals, especially long run. And the reason you want to set ambitious goals for yourself is because when you set an ambitious goal, it's easier for you to start saying no to the not so important things, because you have a big goal. So now you have to focus on the priorities, on the vital things that will get you there. So that's really helpful. And you can use your capacity to the best of its extent. Okay. But this is long run. Gradually, on a weekly basis, set up a process. Just set some time with yourself. Sit down, get a cup of coffee, get a cup of tea. With yourself, treat yourself nicely, review and reflect on your previous week. You know, what happened? What did you plan to do? What actually you did, and what can you learn from that? And then set the goals for the next week. And then Jason is suggesting something that's quite interesting, not just have a to-do list, but I have a not-to-do list that will help you to, again, have a better idea about your capability. And it will help you to not feel guilty when you get all the things you have to get done and it's time for you to unplug, not work, do something else. Even if you're a founder and we know that you have 20,000 more things to do, that's okay. Now, here is the question to you, Jason. I don't think we talked about it yet. Do you recommend founders to set boundaries in terms of, let's say, after 7 o'clock or after 6 o'clock, I'm not working? Like, do you work in time blocks, and then you are kind of very strict about not working after the time reaches?
So I guess there's me and then there's other people. And okay. I think a thing that I'm intentionally very conscious of is, you know, I don't know what works great for other people. Like other people are going to have their recipe. And I think I'm very weary of like broad sweeping general advice, you know, because we're all different in some way, shape or form. Some people are going to do the best work of their day from 9 at night until 3 in the morning. Is that a good idea? I don't know. Tell me about who they are and their life and whether it works for them and what that looks like. And, you know, there's all sorts of questions there. And so the direct answer to your question is like, no, I would never tell somebody like set a hard boundary at 7 o'clock and don't do a single piece of work after that. Instead, I would probably spend time with them on like, what's important to you in your life overall? And where are we finding time for all of those things? And what's your system going to look like for you at that time in that way, in whatever structure makes sense? And I think that, you know, all too often there are a lot of resources out there that say like, you should do it this way, not that way. I don't know how we get to that point because it's just, everybody's different. You know, I've not really found a rule of being human that like is broadly applicable across every single person on this planet. And I think that that could be really challenging because, you know, even if it's something that's applicable to 80% of people, then the 20% of the people are going to be sitting there saying, what the hell, I'm doing this thing wrong. Like, I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. I think there's like your way. Is it aligned with like your intent and what you're trying to accomplish and your priorities and how you want to live your life? And if yes, it's totally right. The problem is if you say my evenings are really important for me and I really want to make sure that that's time that I spend with my partner or my kids or whatever. And like, that's sacred time for me. And yet you spend all that time working most often, that's just building up the conditions for regret because it's misaligned with your priorities and your intent. And so I would rather work with somebody on like, what matters to you? How do you want to live against that? And then how do we make sure that you're holding yourself accountable against the way that you're trying to live? It's when we unintentionally do these things that I think there can be a really big challenge.
And a lot of times it comes down to experimentation. You can find all this great advice. I mean, there's so many books, podcasts, resources, Google, ChatGPT. You can find some other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like you can learn. You can learn all the habits of every. I was listening to a podcast of the morning routine of Napoleon.
Yeah.
Somebody like you can find that stuff. But do I want to do like Napoleon? Like. Maybe that I can get some inspiration. I can see if it works for me, for my intention. And well, that one is cool. That doesn't work. All right. This is what makes me productive. This is what makes me happy when I do it this way.
I totally agree. Like for me, you know, it's not that working at a startup is great. It comes with lots of challenges. I don't think it's necessarily better or worse than any other kind of job you can get. It's just different. But for me, probably one of the most important lessons that I learned, continue to learn from being in the startup environment is just, like you said, experimentation. And, you know, holding up a mirror and turning that same experimentation mentality towards your life, for me, has been incredibly, incredibly helpful. And I totally agree. You know, there's lots of stuff that works for lots of people. I wouldn't even say that it's the same as like, you know, what works for you doesn't work for me in general. It could be that what works for you right now doesn't work for me right now at the stage that I'm at in my life or what's going on around in my life. So, you know, I went through a period of about 2 years where I was just constantly experimenting on like different ways to do this and do that and feel better and do this and try this at work and try this at home. And like some of those things weren't right for me right at that time. And I keep them and I try them again from time to time in the future. The same way, like, I don't like broccoli. You know, when you're a kid, you're like, this is not very good, you know, and now I love broccoli, right? Like you keep trying it because your tastes change over time. Your life changes over time. Your priorities change over time. The way you want to do things changes over time. And so constantly just trying it on for size and being like, oh, this person thinks this thing is a good thing to do. Don't take their word for it. Try it. Don't take my word for it. Take a not to do list. That's what I was saying. Like, try 2 or 3 weeks where you do it. See if it's better. If it is, keep it. If it's not, you should kill it and send me the feedback. I'd love to, you know, I'd love to hear it. But I had a thing where I was thinking about ways to like do and feel better overall. And I was taking cold plunges every single day. Lots of people are into this. There's a lot of research that shows that you submerge in cold water, it increases dopamine. Dopamine is the feel-good chemical in your brain. You feel better throughout the day, blah, 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 blah. Great. So I was doing this for like, I don't remember how long, like freezing cold, right? And I've got young kids, and as ridiculous as it sounds, it's like hard to carve out time for yourself. And like, I would have a shower in the morning after the kids, I get the kids to school, and it's just like, I get a few minutes of just like zero interruptions, you know, like that was like a little bit of my time. And that's when I was doing the cold plunges. It's best to do it in the morning. And I started to dread it every morning. Just like, oh God, I'd wake up like thinking about how long until I got to get in the cold water, get in the cold water. I'm freezing afterwards. Got to warm myself up. You know what? It probably spiked my dopamine. In general, I felt pretty good throughout the day. But I really disliked the experience leading up to it, doing it and warming myself up afterwards. And I said, why? Like, it's just not the right thing right now. And I cut it and I felt way better. And probably I'll go back to it at some point. And all the scientific research is there. Like, it's accurate that it can increase dopamine. As far as I know, it's accurate that it can increase dopamine in your brain, which makes you feel better. And yet, it's just not the right thing for me in my life at this moment. You know, and nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean that the tactic's wrong. It doesn't mean that I'm wrong. It just means like I tried this thing out. It didn't fit great. Like on with the next thing. You know, it's something that, you know, if you work at a startup where you don't, you can learn this test and learn methodology and apply it to your life and just see.
Which kind of fits with the topic, one of the topics that you're exploring in your upcoming book, just to remind the listeners. The upcoming book is going to be called Quietly Crushing It. So sure to check out Jason Silver, sign up for the newsletter and learn on the process of him writing the book with all the best ideas that come out of it. But one of the topics that you already mentioned during this interview, enjoy your day to day. And the example that you gave was, you know, this is one little win for you to enjoy your day to day even more. But what is the main premise? Like, what is the main message that you want to leave the readers of your upcoming book with when it comes to this section of the book?
Yeah. So this is going to sound obvious, which, you know, for me personally, I've kind of found that the best stuff is usually like obvious in retrospect, but a lot of times, you know, I find like myself and others, we're working. We don't spend a lot of time thinking about the way in which we're working. And, you know, you want to enjoy your job more and you think about things like, well, I'm going to work less hours. You know, we see lots of people in the like quiet quitting movement. We see some people are just like, well, you know, I don't really enjoy work in general. So I'm just going to stop. You know, that's like the great resignation. Challenging environments for sure. But the benefit is they've kind of run global experiments for us in a certain way where we can look back now and we can look at the data. And what the data shows is it's something like 80% of people who left their jobs as part of the Great Resignation, either like fully left work or they changed jobs, 80% of them regret the move, right? And the reason for this is like, if you're doing something some way and then you go and do that the same way somewhere else, eventually the honeymoon phase of a new job is gonna fade. And you're going to get back into the old patterns. And for folks who are, you know, quiet quitting, the research there is showing that like, yeah, the idea is spend less time at work, you'll have more time for other things. And that's true. That's what people are reporting is I don't care about my job as much anymore. I'm spending more time outside of the office. That's happening. They're getting more time. But the overarching purpose of it is to feel better overall, and they're not. Stress is higher now than it was at the peak of the pandemic, particularly stress at work, even with people.
Interesting. Interesting.
And the reason why I think this happens is for the most part, most people are not driven with a real ambition to find a way to do the minimum amount possible and not get caught. Most people want to find a way to impact the world in some way, shape, or form. You know, if what you want to do in life is like do the absolute minimum not to get caught, you're going to be the kind of person that's going to look for all sorts of efficiencies that you can build in and make your job as easy as possible for you. And that's probably going to feel great for you. A lot of other people who are trying to carve out more time are finding that that's not helpful because we want to have impact. And so the like thesis for the book that I'm writing is we don't want the impact to go away. We just need to change the way that we're working because the way that we're working isn't working. You can't just keep working the same way, go do it at a new job. It's not going to help. You can't just pull back. You're going to lose the impact. The ambition goes away. You know, it's not going to feel great. The flip side to that is a lot of us are not enjoying our jobs right now. Like it just, there's a lot of people who are burning out, disengaged. It's just like, it's a really tough environment. And so the obvious thought is if you want to enjoy your job more, just do more things that you enjoy at your job. It sounds ridiculous. I know it sounds ridiculous because it's like, well, I can't. There are a million reasons why I can't do that. Often I find when you break it apart and unpack it, there's actually a lot more you can do than you think you can. And what I've seen the challenge is that in a work environment, we spend all of our time on what and almost none of our time on how. So by that, I mean, we've got to accomplish some kind of a goal. Great. What are we going to do? Work is purpose built to do an awesome job at this. Build a project plan or a sprint or whatever it is. And like, here's what we're going to go and do. We're going to do this and then this and then this and then this will happen, which will lead to that and blah, 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 blah. Great. We take little to no time to think about how do we want it to feel? How are we going to do these things? Right. And why this can wind up being a huge challenge is things that I get really excited about and how I really want to do things will be very different from you. Let's imagine like a very simple, basic example. There's a meeting on Friday. We've done some kind of a product release or a marketing campaign or whatever it is, and we want to know what happened as a result. And both of us could be hypothetically asked to do it. So on Friday, we want to get in a room. We want to review the progress. Okay. I really love data analysis. I'm making this up. I really love data analysis. And I don't really love talking in front of people. It's not my jam. You're kind of the opposite. Cool. So what you might do is you might have some chats with people because you really like to talk to folks and get the information that you need. And then you're going to make a PowerPoint presentation because you like to do that. And then on the meeting on Friday, we're all going to sit there while you stand in front of the whole group and you're going to walk us slide by slide, giving an awesome presentation that we're all going to love and you're going to love doing it. And if you made me do that, I would hate it. Right? It would not be something that I would enjoy. What I would do instead is I would actually spend my time in the data because that's what I like. I'd open up Excel spreadsheets or database tables or whatever it is. I'd collect all the information. I'd send out a pre-read email in advance and I would ask people to come with questions ready or send questions in advance. Everybody would have read this. We hop into the meeting, right? And I'm going to answer questions as they come to make sure that everybody understands the analysis that I did that came out of it. Exact same outcome. We reviewed the information, we figured out what happened, completely different path to get there. And that's where a little bit of time spent on like, how do I want this to feel? How am I going to accomplish these things that we've laid out can have such a huge impact for folks because there are infinitely many paths that you can take to arrive at the same destination, right? Like you open up Google Maps, you have to go to wherever you want to go. You put in the address. The first thing Google Maps does after you pump in the address is it asks you questions. Do you want to go by bus? Are you driving? Are you walking? Oh, you're driving. Do you want to avoid tolls? Do you want to take the most economical route? These are questions that are helping you figure out what path you want to take that is like most enjoyable or the best fit with whatever you care about. We don't do this at work. And so the suggestion I have for folks is like all the time that you spend on what you need to accomplish, project plans, goals, et cetera, still do that. But when that's done, take a little bit of time. It doesn't usually take a ton. And think about how do I want to accomplish these things? What do I really enjoy doing? What do I really want to learn, right? How do I incorporate those things into the tasks that are being either assigned to me or that I'm picking up? And by doing that, no, you're not going to change the project plan. We're still going to have to do the things that we need to do, but you have a lot more agency over the way in which you're going to accomplish these things, such that it's way more likely that these things are going to be energy drivers for you, rather than just like, oh God, I got to stand in front of the room and give a presentation. Like, I'm going to stress about this. I'm not going to like it. And blah, 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 blah. Does that make sense?
We had one of the first guests on the podcast is a friend of mine. His name is Andrew Tarvin. He's a humor engineer. So his official title is humor engineer. So basically he's a former employee of Procter & Gamble, but also a passionate stand-up comedian.
That's awesome. On site. Great title.
So he decided there's so much boredom in companies, and I want to make organizations more fun, because what gets fun gets done.
Yeah.
He's going around teaching companies how to be more, to have more fun, to have more enjoyment.
Yeah.
And I totally relate to that. And there's a couple of angles, and I want you to maybe cover both of them. One of the angles is the perspective of the employee. What can we do within the context of the structure and the frame we've been given so we can have more fun? And I love the suggestion you gave that, well, maybe you have a to-do list. How about you spend 5 minutes with your to-do list and ask yourself, how can I have fun doing this? How can I delegate some of the things that are not so fun?
Yeah.
How can I, you know, improve the experience? What do I want to feel? But what else can employees do so they can actually enjoy what they do?
Yeah. And I think, to be clear, like, listen, I love your friend's title, and I think that's an awesome idea. And I think it's important to be careful about the expectation. You know, I don't think it's always going to be fun, to be very clear. Like, it can always be fulfilling, but it's not always going to be fun. You know, if you give me a task that I've never done before, I'm going to have some not fun moments trying to figure that out. You know, a lot of banging my head against the wall. How does this work? I don't know. But it can be very fulfilling because I've chosen a path that is like more aligned with something I'm going to enjoy and be fulfilled in as a result. And so a thing that I think a lot of people can do, I'll give you an exercise. You can try it afterwards. People who are listening can try it as well. And the idea here is you got to start by knowing yourself a little bit. And I say this and people usually say like, well, I know myself pretty well. And I'm like, cool. Well, here's an exercise you can do. You need a timer. Anything works. A sand timer is a lot cooler looking, but you can use the timer on your phone if you want. You want to set the timer for about 2 minutes. Get a piece of paper and a pen. Start the timer. Write down 10 things that your phone is really great at. Right? And, you know, browsing the internet, going on the Instagram, whatever it might be, watching YouTube, listening to this podcast. So start the timer, write down 10 things. I've never met you. I'll bet you get through all 10 things before the 2 minutes is up for your phone. Okay. Flip the piece of paper over, start the 2 minute timer again. Now write down 10 things that you're really great at. And I'll bet you that you get past the 2 minutes and you haven't filled the 10 things about yourself. So we've put more thought and know more about what our phones are great at than what we are great at. And one of the best ways that you can be fulfilled and enjoy what you're doing at work more is to do things you're already really great at. We're all great at something, right? Looking for ways to bring your unique skills or the thing that you're really great at to bear at work regularly is a great way to just genuinely enjoy your job a lot more. And it does mean that you have to reimagine how you're doing things. In the example we mentioned earlier, where we say, I'm really good at data analysis, your boss might come to you and say, hey, I'd like you to give a big presentation, right? Hang on a second. Maybe I don't care about becoming a better presenter, right? Maybe that's not something that's interesting to me. Can I then have a conversation with my boss and say, what's the point of this? What's the outcome we're trying to get here? Well, the outcome is the whole team needs to understand what happened in this thing that we did. No problem. I'd like to try it this way. I'm going to do a bunch of data analysis. I'm going to send that out in a very, you know, well-written message to everybody in advance. And then I'm going to ask them to ask me questions, right? I'd like to do it that way because this is something I think, you know, I'm going to do a better job at. And I think I'm going to be able to get this point across a lot better. It's going to get us there still. Have that conversation with your manager. Sometimes they're going to say, sorry, dude, you can't do it that way. This needs to be a presentation. Okay, fine. Now we've got to find another angle, but like that is not the most likely outcome. What the most likely outcome is, we never even think to have that conversation in the first place because we've not really done the time to say, what are 10 things I'm really great at? So that anytime somebody asks me to do something, there's a very high probability that I can do it leveraging one of the 10 things I'm really great at. And it's going to take you more than 2 minutes, unfortunately, because of the way that our brains are wired up. You know, most people are somewhat humble and it's hard to like think about all the great things. I bet you if I asked you to write 10 things you suck at, you'd write that really fast. But if you have to come up with a list of 10 things you're really great at, it's going to take you some time. It's not going to take you 3 years. It's going to take you a half an hour or an hour. So invest that time, you know, spend a half an hour, an hour, write down 10 things you're really great at. And then as tasks come up, look for ways to deploy one of those 10 things that you're already really great at against that task that you need to do. No change to the task, right? We can't, usually as an employee, you can't necessarily change that the task needs to be done, but you usually can change the way you're going to approach that task. You just need to know how. Take a little bit of time, write out 10 things, you know, and then the next time you get handed a task, do it in a way that you already, like leverage a skill that you already really have, that you're already pretty great at.
So a couple of very important pointers here. Number one, I love the exercise. What a great exercise for people to get to know themselves a little bit better. And then the example you gave with the person not being able to communicate with their boss. I think a lot of people don't ever have this conversation because they just want to be a good employee. You know, my boss asked me to do something, I'm not going to discuss it. I just will deliver because if I deliver, I'm a good employee. But that's not exactly the case. Not necessarily the case. You can have this conversation. And actually, if your boss is a good person, is a good leader, they'll actually love it.
They're going to love it for sure.
They're probably very busy and they just have this idea, just want to delegate it and move on. But it doesn't mean that they want you to suffer. Like they would want you to be feeling happy and productive and do the things that you're good at and you enjoy, because then you'll be motivated. It's good for the company. It's good for him as a leader. So, or for her as a leader, right? So it's have these conversations, stand your ground, you know, super, super important. And if I can go maybe on top of what you said, which is amazing, if I can go even one level deeper, this is a good part, right? Like, who are we? What are we good at? Sometimes the things we're good at, even though we're good at them, doesn't mean that they make us happy anymore sometimes. Like, for example, I used to be a movie producer, Jason. That's my background. And I got into movies because I loved storytelling and directing. And then I became a producer because I was really good in organizing things, convincing people, bringing them together, time management, you know, moving in crisis with so many crises on set. For those of you who are movie producers, you know what I'm talking about. But this is something I've been really good at: networking, connecting people, you know, just being the puppet master in many ways. At some point, I started not to like it anymore because it was so much administration, so much, you know, hustle and pain. And I was extremely good at that, but I didn't like it. So there's sometimes, even from this list of 10 that you come up with, you might want to ask yourself, do I actually love these things? And naturally, when we're good at something, we love it. But also, sometimes we don't.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, I think the thing that often gets in my way, other people's way, is, you know, you hear a lot of these common, I don't know, phrases, you got to know yourself, self-awareness, whatever. It's like, what does that even mean? You know, it's very inaccessible. Like, I'm not a monk. I don't have or prioritize the time to go and, you know, sit in a forest and think about life for 40 hours a week. And so it's like, well, what do I actually do? There's not a lot of tangible thought out there. And that's where, like, over time kind of developed this exercise of just like, it's a very simple thing you can do. It doesn't take long. It takes, like I said, if it takes you a long time, maybe it's an hour. I think most people somewhere around 30-ish minutes just to give it like a t-shirt size. And just something as simple as like, right now, what do I really enjoy doing? What am I really great at right now? What do I really want to learn right now? Like, those are kind of the three areas I really recommend for folks is break it down into like, what do you love? What can you leverage? Meaning like, what are you great at that you can already do really well? And what do you want to learn? And if you have a short list for each one of those three things, I love these things, I'm really great and want to leverage these things, I want to learn these things. Again, it's not that you're going to have fun at all times, but it's going to be way more fulfilling. As long as you're picking out one of the things from any one of these lists. And if you can find a way to accomplish a task that leverages something you love, are already great at, and something that you also want to learn all at the same time, that's when you're knocking it out of the park, right? If you can get all three of those things humming all at once, but you don't need them, you just need one. And so because this exercise is quite short, you know, it's a couple bullet points underneath each one of these headings. Like you said, you do it every couple months, once a quarter, every 6 months, something like that. It's not this big, gigantic, I got to sit down and write myself a performance review, which nobody likes doing. And it's a big, messy process. It's literally just like, do I enjoy being a producer right now? Like, what are the things that I do on a regular basis? How does that map against what I really like right now? And it just quick check-ins, I think, is what's really, really important. And it's the absence of the check-in that I think creates so many challenges. And to your point on bosses, most great bosses, they want the outcome, right? Your boss is saying, we're here, we need to be here. The business is saying, we're here, we need to be here. To use the map analogy, whether you take a car on a toll route in the most economical route possible or a train, just get us there, right? Like, that's what we're trying to accomplish. And yeah, they might delegate something really quickly, but just open up the conversation, you know, and you need to have the information on your side to say, if I do it this way, I think it's going to get us exactly what we want in the best possible product. You know, what do you think? Like I said, sometimes it might not work out. That's why it's called work, not play. There are times when we have to do things that we don't like, don't want to learn, and don't use our best skills. Those should just be, again, the exception, not the rule. So just open up the conversation, see what happens.
One of the mandatory exercises we do with every batch of startups and acceleration programs, every time there's a new person joining my team, we do this exercise. It's called Map of Responsibilities, where we ask every person from a specific team to, first of all, we identify what are the different responsibilities and tasks and projects in a company or in a department, in a team. And then every person needs to individually map down using three different colors, right? Traffic light colors, green, yellow, red. How do they feel about doing these specific tasks?
Nice.
Green, I love it. Yellow, it's okay. Doesn't bother me. It's fine, but don't really love it. Okay. Red, hate it. I hate it. I wish I'm not doing it. Right? You do a map. Everybody does it individually, obviously. Then you combine all of the in one sheet or one place, and you have a real conversation.
Love it.
You know, hey, oh, Maria, you have red on project management, but you're so good at that. What do you mean by like, is it, you have so many projects I delegated to you last month. Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm good at that. Somebody has to do it, but I don't really like to. Oh, interesting. You know what? This new project, Lydia likes to do it. Let's work with like, right. So you can find some spaces and I want this kind of to be the kind of the last topic to wrap up with that, Jason, but what can you recommend to, you know, let's take the leadership angle. What can we do as leaders, as managers, as founders, so we can make the culture of our teams and companies more fun, more enjoyable, more pleasant place to be?
Yeah, I mean, that exercise you talked about is great. You know, I think like if more folks did that, it would probably be awesome. I think as a leader, manager, like asking these questions is important. You know, telling your people that you care about this and telling them that you want them to bring this kind of stuff to you is important because of what you mentioned earlier. Like a lot of people will assume if I start bringing up these questions, I'm rocking the boat. I'm not a good employee. You know, it's it's a lot of stuff that I think inherent in the exercise that you just described. Like, you were making an assumption about Maria. She's good at this thing, therefore she wants to do more of it. It's the assumption that's the problem, right? Having a venue or a way or an exercise or a tool that prompts the conversation is really, really important. And by giving people this exercise, you're showing them, I value how you feel against these tasks because I'm actively asking you to tell me how you feel about this. And then we'll talk about it. And of course, there will be times when you're going to tell Maria, sorry, Maria, you got to do this red light thing. I know you don't love it. It needs to get done. We have nobody else that can do it. It needs to be you. But because you have this conversation, hopefully on a regular basis, you're going to know this has happened 15 times in the last month. Like, this can't be right. We got to find some way to juggle these things around. And so just spending a little bit of time with your folks in one-on-ones, not just asking them, what are you doing? The most common question in some way, shape, or form. What are your priorities? What are you working on? What's the status of it? What? How? Spend a little bit of time on how. How is it going? How are you feeling about it? How are you enjoying it? How is it helping you learn?
How can I support you?
That's right. Like, a bunch of these questions of just getting that into the regular flow of the way that you're working with your direct reports can be super helpful. Because again, it's not that you're going to change something that they need to do. You're just going to know that it's a thing that they need to do and they don't like doing it. So there's going to be some kind of a mental counter going on in your head, or you're going to write a note in your one-on-ones or whatever, that like, I can't keep giving this to Maria in perpetuity, or she's probably not going to be super happy with her job. The absence of that conversation goes something like what you described up front of, Maria's crushing this thing. I got to give her more and more and more and more and more of it. Meanwhile, Maria's sitting there so underwater with stuff she doesn't like doing. She's just like, what's going on here? Like, you can be a huge pressure release valve for your people by just saying, hey, how are you feeling about the stuff you're working on right now? Like, talk to me about that. It's going great. Are you learning? Are you enjoying it? How are you feeling about it? You know, how are you accomplishing these things? Is there a different way you want to accomplish it? Like, the more time you can spend facilitating that conversation, opening it up, showing your people that you value it, the more they're going to bring it to you, the more you're going to talk about it. And like you said earlier, the more you align what you're doing with what you enjoy doing, the better it's going to be for everybody. As your direct report, as an employee, I'm going to like it way more. I'm going to do a better job at it. As my manager, you're going to be super happy because I'm doing a better job at it and I'm enjoying it along the way. The company's going to be happy because the work product coming out of both of us is better and we're both enjoying it more. So, you know, I think just opening up that conversation, making sure that you chat about it with your folks and not getting so hyper-focused on what, that we don't spend any time talking about how and how it feels.
Yeah. And it's in many ways, just, you have to put on the leader who cares kind of hat, you know, caring leader that cares for their people. There could be many strategies and tools and ideas that you can find, but it's like, if you show up every day and part of your intention is for your people to be feeling well, to be feeling empowered, to be feeling that they have all the resources they need, but also they're taken care of as humans and they do the things that they love, you can't get it wrong. You do a lot of mistakes on the road, but at least you'll be doing the right things.
Yeah, I think it was it's like Ben Horowitz quote, something like managing strictly by numbers is like painting by numbers. You know, it's for amateurs. Like, I love that quote. You know, the painted by numbers stuff where it's just like, there's a, you know, my 6-year-old has it. It's like, there's a picture there and it's broken up into different sections and like numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, and all the number ones you paint green and all the number twos you paint yellow and all the number threes you paint red. You know, that's how I would paint a picture because I'm a terrible artist and I don't know how to do that. Same thing applies to management. Like, there's no one size fits all solution for every person that you're going to be managing. So just get the conversation out into the open and it usually leads to a better spot. Even if Maria has to do this crazy thing we don't like her to do, at least we both have recognized you're doing this thing that you don't like and we're working on you not doing this at all times.
That's it, man.
Just even having that out in the open can be super helpful.
Jason, that's been so fun. I don't know where the 64 minutes went spending time with you. And hey, man, how do I make my day more enjoyable? I get Jason to come to my podcast. So that's
it. Did the same thing for me. Starts my day off super great. So win-win all around. Hopefully, you know, enjoyable for the folks that are out there listening as well.
Everybody who's listening, let us know in the comments on LinkedIn or just send us an email or something. Let us know what's the one thing you took out of this conversation. This podcast is about insights and knowledge, but at the end of the day, ideas by themselves, they're nothing. You know, execution makes the difference. So what's the one thing you take out of this podcast? Or for that sake, from any other podcast you're listening to, let us know. If you have any comments, questions, drop them. Happy to answer them. And just before we wrap up, Jason, thank you so much for being with us, for being a giver, for sharing from the heart, from no filter, right? Like sharing all the mistakes, all the things that are not working as well. Where could people find you, get in touch with you? There may be some startups or some companies that want to work with you. How can you support them? So give us the overview.
Yeah, I'm pretty findable on LinkedIn. If you jump over there and look for Jason Silver, there's like a dude that is a dating coach who always tends to show up before me. I'm not him. I can't help you land a date. I'm usually the next one after him. So you'll be able to find me. Like I said, I don't think there's anybody else who's doing startup personal training. You can find me there, look me up, connect, shoot me a note, whatever. The best way to get in touch with me though is like I said, you sign up for my newsletter at qcibook.com. When you sign up there, you're going to get an email. Tells you all about the newsletter. It sends you the preview chapter from my books. You can read that and you can reply to that email. It goes straight to me. I try to answer every note that comes back to me. So you'll have my email address there and you can fire me a note and tell me anything you want. Ask me any questions. Get in touch that way is definitely the easiest way.
Dude, that other Jason Silver guy should be getting so many leads from you going to podcasts and sharing your name.
Yeah, if I start getting asked to help people find dates, I'll know that I've potentially jumped up him one spot on the list.
There you go, man. There you go. Thank you so much. And if you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe on your favorite platform. It's been a pleasure being with you. And next week, join us again as we will be here with Maya Voya, the growth marketer that's having a new book. So it's going to be a blast. Have a great day and let's keep performing. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.